Mark Carmen, Adam Hogue.
Chicago Sports Conversation.
Wide, wide world of sports.
This is The Beat.
Welcome in. This is The Beat. Adam Hogue, Mark Carmen. Good to be back today. Sorry I missed yesterday's show, Mark.
We missed you, Adam. Good job, of course, by Kevin Powell, but you were very much missed in your move, but we're very happy your move is over. You seem pleasantly in a good mood. I'm very proud of you.
Yeah, I'm in a good mood. Things are going well.
Well, you got James Shields on the south side.
Yeah, that was
buddy.
Yeah, that was the most important part of the move yesterday, was that the White Sox acquired James Shields. I don't know. Like, what... Did you guys sense, as you guys were doing the show yesterday, did you sense like an excitement from White Sox fans over this?
Well, since we never get any reaction from White Sox fans on the show, it's hard to sense.
True.
I mean, that's just the reality. Not that we don't love our White Sox here, as we are both rooting for a crosstown classic.
And I'm on my White Sox island here.
Well,
on the show,
I join you occasionally. James Shields to start on Wednesday. I mean, I think Sox fans' reaction to this is, yeah, that's kind of okay, but we still have lots of other problems, and we're...
It's kind of like, hey, great move, hard to hate it, but how about you win a game?
Winning a game would be good, not winning right now. Losing again to the Tigers.
Getting swept by the Tigers is really bad.
Getting swept by the Tigers,
I mean,
bad.
Last week was one thing with that awful three-game sweep in Kansas City that you probably should have swept them, but... Those were the Royals, and the Royals are the defending World Series champions, and they're still pretty good at baseball. The Tigers have been struggling throughout the whole season.
Yeah.
And by the way, the Tigers are all of a sudden right there on the White Sox heels now.
When you lose 10 of 12, whether it's to the Tigers or the 1927 New York Yankees, it's not good. It's just not good.
No.
But James Shields will make his White Sox debut on Wednesday. Miguel Gonzalez to the bullpen, so... It is a survival of the fittest, as Gonzalez better in the bullpen as...
Gonzalez was fine, by the way.
Well, did you think that they should have perhaps put Matt Latos in the bullpen? Because that's the survivor. Matt Latos on Survivor White Sox Island, and he survives.
Matt Latos went through a stretch that was just as bad as John Danks' stretch earlier in the year.
Yes. So, how much better will James Shields be and whatnot?
Well, he should be better, but I'm just...
Well, he's been...
I guess they're not willing to give up on Matt Latos yet.
They got to get healthy too. Austin Jackson's got the turf toe, six straight games out. Melky Cabrera's have been out with a family emergency. JB Shuck and Jason Coates are colliding in the outfield. Jimmy Rollins is not good. They got some problems over there, but hey, they have got James Shields, and a guy that knows him very well is Joe Maddon, and he weighed in on the White Sox getting James Shields, who the Cubs were also in on, but didn't want to pay the Padres price at the time. So this was Maddon, as we give you a little Joe on the show on James Shields.
When he came on board, he's the guy that really, tremendous work ethic. He set the work ethic among the starters. He was the guy that would be on the top step of the dugout when somebody else was pitching as the group walked in. And he really brought them together in that way. Purely competitively speaking, my God, I mean, he just never wants to come out of a game. He could beat anything. He thinks he could beat anybody. He's got really good stuff. I don't know where his stuff is at. I mean, when I saw him last, he had really good, good fastball, really good changeup. One of the better changeups I've had the pleasure of managing. He's got a really good curveball, too. People don't even know how good his curveball is. And I used to try to get him to throw that more often. Competitively, man, off the charts. Again, I mean, this is not hyperbole. This is the guy that really set up the methods where with those starting pitchers. Really got after it in a weight room, conditioning, competitively. He's the guy that set the tone 2008, whatever it was, 7-8.
That's so. I should have mentioned that Maddon, of course, managed him with the Tampa Bay Rays.
Right, 7 years in Tampa with Joe Maddon. That's a long time for those two to be together. And, of course, the 2011 season, 11 complete games that year. Incredible 2.82 ERA. That, you know what's kind of weird, though? That was his only All-Star year.
Is that right? He's only made the All-Star game one time? I didn't realize that.
This guy's been in the league for 11 years. He's only a one-time All-Star. So, I mean, I don't want to kill the guy, but it's...
He was a huge...
You could argue that this guy is one of the more overrated pitchers in baseball.
That's tough, because, I mean, he helped turn around the Royals, right? Helped them get to a World Series. I mean, listen to what Madden just said there. Like, I was just taking notes. Work ethic. Top step of the dugout. You love a guy like that, right? The White Sox can always use, any team can use somebody like that. The White Sox could too, which they've added more guys like that in Todd Frazier, but another one, it's not going to hurt.
That sounded great when they were winning. Where's all that now?
Well, that's why James Shields is coming to the rescue, baby.
No, it's not. You hit the ball.
Matt.
Seriously. I mean, all that was great. You turn around the locker room, blah, 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 blah. This right now looks like the same team as last year's.
Right now it does. That's your
and by right now we mean 3 weeks, almost 4 weeks.
Yeah, no, it's been a massive tailspin. But I mean, still, massive competitor, never wants to come out of a game. He's got great stuff. He loves his. It's the best changeup that he ever managed. I don't know how you actually manage a changeup, but apparently, according, if you believe Joe Maddon, right there, the best changeup he's managed. Loves his curveball. Weight room sets the tone, which I think is hard. You know, you come in the middle of June. Or early June, whatever, if you want to really boil down to what time of month it is. And then you're going to come in and sort of be a leader. I mean, you're the new guy. That's hard to do. But regardless, the White Sox clearly believe that they are a division contender and can be right there with the Royals. And so they make this. And the move is a little bit interesting, too, because he can opt out of his contract at the end of the year.
That is interesting.
So if he pitches great, he opts out and you don't have him. If he pitches terribly, you do have him and you're not paying all his money. But now you have a pitcher that might be done, and you're paying some decent dough for him.
Yeah, 34 years old.
Which is why you didn't give up really anything to get him.
Well, that's right. And look, it probably sounded strong when I said maybe one of the more overrated guys. And I'm just talking about how much he's hyped up. Very good pitcher.
I'm not
trying to take anything away from what he is. He's a very good pitcher, solid pitcher throughout the years. But this isn't one of the most dominant pitchers in baseball, by any means. But that's not what the White Sox got him for. I mean, and I said this with you guys yesterday when I called in. You know, this is supposed to be the White Sox number three. And you'd hope Carlos Rodon, your big-time draft pick, steps it up. And James Shields is more like your number four. And if that's the case, and you somehow do make the playoffs, which isn't looking all that great right now, Sale, Quintana, James Shields.
Not bad.
And Carlos Rodon,
not bad.
That's a pretty solid four.
World Series, come on.
Basically what this does is it prevents Matt Latos from having to start in the playoffs that you're not going to make.
I love that you're talking about the playoff rotation.
Yeah, it's not happening.
It's good. Well, you never know. Chicago Tribune delivers the stories that make the city with more journalists at work than any other local news source. Become a member today at chicagotribune.com. We are already getting some texts in at 312-981-7200 about the huge sports story of the day. We're going to talk about that next on 720 WGN.
Hey, real quick before you get to your...
the biggest story in this world of sports today?
Yeah, we'll see about that. I just want to point out one last thing on the White Sox before we change the subject.
Uh-huh.
With the loss today, assuming the White Sox end up losing this game, that'll be their fifth straight loss in a game that Jose Quintana pitched. Mm. Fifth straight Jose Quintana start lost. Also, they've lost their last three that Chris Sale has started. So that is eight games right there from your top two guys that have been pitching pretty darn well, by the way. Now, it's gotten a little shaky as of late. Like, Quintana wasn't all that good today. However, some of these other losses, you lost 2-1. You lost 4-1. You lost 4-3. You lost 1-0. Score some runs.
Well, they're going to
hit the ball.
They're going to be 29-28 if they don't come back from 5-2 down in the, what is it, the eighth inning right now. So you're talking about a team that's one game over 500. Which is a huge drop from where they were. And the Indians now and the Royals are, well, both in Cleveland 6 over, the Royals are 5 over, which is not a huge gap, but it's starting to become a gap, let's put it that way. So yeah,
it's becoming a gap, and, you know, with the wild card these days, it sort of leaves the window open. But, you know, as we saw last year talking about this team, even the last week before the trade deadline, are they a contender, are they not? You know, that same thing's probably going to happen this year. But as I kept saying on this program last year, they weren't really all that good of a baseball team, right? So I'm trying to remain positive with this group, but you're starting to get to that point where maybe they're just not that good. And
well, they got to turn it around, bottom line.
You were 13 games above 500 on Monday, May 9th, after that great come-from-behind win.
What's the date today?
In Texas. What is it, June 5th now?
June the 5th, yes.
I mean, it's almost a month later.
Right.
And you said they're one game over 500.
Well, that's a game of baseball. Did you hear Hawk yesterday? That was great.
No, I was busy.
This is the road trip from hell.
He said that?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, they also...
this is the... You know what he was saying like a week ago. It doesn't matter. We lost again, but we're still in first place.
Well, what did I tell you about that? The reason he kept saying that was because he knew in his heart that it was going to be the last day, possibly ever in his career, depending on what happens with Hawk in the offseason. He knew that was probably the last time he's ever going to say that about the White Sox.
You know what he's saying today? No matter what happens today, when we wake up tomorrow, we'll still be over 500. And then in a week, yeah. No matter what, we'll still be out of last place. And then it's been a rough stretch. Come on, White Sox. You're coming on home. Right, that's the best I can do
for
you.
The Nationals are coming to town.
Well, that's not great.
James Shields' first opponent, Max Scherzer.
Washington's 10 games over, but they've lost their last two. There's that for you. Cubs and Diamondbacks, great. By the way, 3-2 now, bottom of six. Cubs within a run, as we all know, they're going to come back and win. All right, the biggest story of the day, Adam Hoge, what were you doing this morning?
Moving things, unpacking things. However, I did turn on the TV at about 7 a.m.
Uh-huh. And?
I tried to find some tennis.
And?
It wasn't on yet.
Started at 8.
Yeah, and I was on TV at 7, and they were showing a rerun of semis that I didn't care about. Click, go do work.
Okay, well, that's fine. I mean, you
didn't see a single second of the final.
So Novak Djokovic, 312-981-7200. I know my tennis fans are out there. This is your opportunity. Novak Djokovic beats Andy Murray.
If we get more tennis calls than White Sox calls,
let's prove it.
I quit.
Tennis fans, you are more into it than the White Sox. 312-981-7200. Will Novak Djokovic go down as the greatest tennis champion of all time? You may think that's a little bit tall, a little bit perhaps hyperbolic, but really, when you look at the numbers, he's right there to do it. He beats Murray today, 3-6, 6-1, 6-2, 6-4. Andy Murray, by the way. Just want to make sure we know who we're talking about here. The last man to hold all four major titles simultaneously was... That'd be the Rocket Rod Laver back in 1969. Djokovic is now the defending champion of all four majors, the Australian, the French, Wimbledon, and the U.S. Open. You got to go back to 1969 when the Cubs were blowing an 8-game lead to the New York Mets for the last time that's happened in tennis. Pretty impressive, right? Huh? Throw that in there. Plus, you've got, you know, Djokovic is 29. He's got 12 Grand Slam titles. The top is Roger Federer with 17, Nadal with 14, Sampras with 14. So he needs 5 more to tie Fed. He's won 6 of the last 8 majors, Adam Hoge. 6 of the last 8. Now, Federer went 6 out of 7.
How old is Federer now?
Federer is... I have to look it up. I think he's 34. Dan Law, help me out there. I want to say 34 for Roger Federer.
Djokovic probably has at least 3 more solid prime years.
Yeah, and he is 34. Yes.
3 more solid prime years.
That's 12 opportunities.
And he's 5 behind.
He's got to go 5 for 12. It's going to happen.
He's got a chance.
It's
Yeah, I also said that about Tiger Woods.
Plenty true.
Of time.
I mean, these.
It's going to happen. And guess what? It's not going to happen. He's not catching Jack Nicklaus. So, just throwing that out there to be anti-tennis, man.
Just put it out there as I'm still waiting for our tennis calls. 312-981.
Yeah, they're not coming.
312-981-7200. Let's change it. Were you up this morning and did you watch the French Open, and did you feel blessed to be watching tennis this morning?
Yes, I was up. No, I did not watch tennis.
312-981-7200. I know you're out there. I can feel you. I know my tennis faithful.
I was trying to tell you that where I moved to, there are tennis courts right there. close to the house.
I saw you show me the picture. They've got nice windscreens. You got a beautiful park in New Adam Hoge Land. So I'm going to come out and I'm going to give you a lesson.
I think if you and I'll take a lesson. I think if you and I played against each other, we would both come out of it saying, you're better than I thought.
Okay. I'm willing to have that.
Because I don't really know what to expect from you. I mean, I'm listening to the beat yesterday, and I'm hearing Meltdown City over at East Bank Club.
I had a tough loss on Friday night.
Throwing rackets, hitting tennis balls three courts away, being totally immature.
It's very rare that happens, but it did happen Friday night, and then I lost again yesterday morning. And then I went 1-for-8 in 2 softball games today, which I invited you to, and you didn't come.
You did invite me. I thought we had established that I was moving this weekend, but apparently you forgot when you texted me at midnight last night.
I figured the move was done.
I'm disappointed we can't talk about the other communication we had last night around 10:30.
Oh, well, that's just the way that one goes.
Apparently we can't.
No, 773 texting it. Joko has 7 more prime years with his diet. I don't appreciate this boycott on the phone line right now of people wanting to talk tennis. I'm shocked. I think I'm going to take it personal that people just don't want to talk to me and they're just siding with Adam Hoge. But I can feel, I know that there was lots of love out there this morning. 312-981-7200 French Open. And you're excited, of course, for Wimbledon. See if Djokovic can defend his title. And then the U.S. Open coming back around come Labor Day.
Yeah, that's when football starts. And and football's big in this country. Yeah. I don't know if you know that.
Yes, it is. Can you name, Adam Hoge, the players that have in the history of the game, that have won all 4 majors?
Probably not, but...
Would you like me to tell you?
Sampras?
Nope.
Really?
Never won the French.
See? Come on, man. Win a French.
That's right.
Federer...
Djokovic is the latest person.
How many are there?
There are 4.
Oh, I think you said that.
We have established that.
Yeah, you said that. So I know Federer, Djokovic.
I know my tennis people are out there. I need someone to talk to. 312.
That other dude you said earlier that I forgot his name, the Rocket or whatever.
The Rocket Rod Laver.
So that's 3.
Uh-huh.
And then...
Rafael Nadal. Did you say him?
So that's 4.
Well, Fred Perry, Don Budge, Rod Laver, Roy Emerson, Andre Agassi, Roger Federer, Rafael Nadal.
Whoa.
Djokovic.
So when I asked you how many there were, I wasn't talking about majors or Grand Slams.
What were you talking about?
How many people that I was trying to name.
Oh, okay.
You kept telling me there were 4 people.
I thought, no.
Okay, look. I don't know much about tennis.
I know
that there's 4 Grand Slams.
I was stunned. I was like, I almost crawled under the table.
No.
That's my fault.
A little bit more respect for me.
You every time we've ever talked, you're like, don't care.
Yeah, but half of it's a bit.
Okay. All right, my bad. I apologize. I know that you as an expert sports guy know that there are 4 majors in tennis. That's
they call them majors, right? Or Grand Slams, or both?
Whatever.
Is it kind of, you can use either one?
Either way.
Yeah, I know that.
Okay. Federer.
Starts in Australia. Goes to France.
That's right.
Hits up England. Goes to New York.
Very good. Very, very good.
And then the other... Every single weekend of the year, no one cares.
That's not necessarily true. There's a couple where people care, but for
like
the
what?
The BNP
like at least golf has like legit tournaments.
The BNP Paribas out in California in March. 312-981-7200. Dan Long's having like extensive conversations with people about tennis. He won't let me talk to them. This is really unfortunate. Michelle, I got to get the news, but tell me something about how much you love the sport of tennis. Thank you for making a call. What's 1-0 tennis, White Sox?
Hi.
Hello, Michelle.
Hello, how are you?
I think we're understanding why Dan Long talked to her for so long.
Michelle, did you watch the match this morning?
I did. I did get up at 7 o'clock at 7:30, and I was there at 8 o'clock.
Was it the best summer? Was it the best Sunday you've had all summer/winter/spring?
You know, a better one would be if Maria was still playing, but I got to take what I can get.
Well, she shouldn't have done those drugs, Michelle. That's the reality I know. Michelle, thank you. We got to get to news. I just wanted to get one call in there to prove to you, Adam Hogue, that there are more tennis fans in this city than White Sox fans.
I think you would have been better off if you had just
conceded
the no calls.
Come now. All right, 3:31. By the way, Adam Hogue spent that entire tennis call with his hands on his head.
This here's a story of Cassius Clay, who changed his name to Muhammad Ali. He knows how to talk and he knows how to fight, and all the contenders were beat out of sight. Sing Muhammad, Muhammad Ali. He floats like a butterfly, stings like a bee.
So I've literally been walking around the city all weekend singing this song, and every time I do, I get like a little choked up.
You were definitely singing this as you walked into the studio today.
Catch me if you can.
I love him. Little Black Superman, if you want to YouTube that and just walk around on your phone. The greatest of all time, man. And like, if you did you read any of Steve Rosenblum or David Haw or Fred Mitchell, who we're about to talk to in 2 seconds here on 720 WGN, about Muhammad Ali? Because this is some of the most heartfelt stuff. I mean, Steve Rosenblum was talking about how Muhammad Ali was a big connection for him and his father, and why he got into the business. Like, he wanted to get approval from his dad.
It seems like a lot of people have unique stories like that. I mean, each one of their lives, a different kind of connection that somehow is woven around Muhammad Ali.
Right. I mean, David Haw was saying, he's interviewed probably nearly every athlete and notable. His most memorable, by far best experience was as a young writer with Muhammad Ali. And Fred Mitchell got to spend a day with Muhammad Ali up in his estate in Michigan, formerly the Chicago Tribune. Hey, Fred. Great for you to take some time with us today to talk about the greatest of all time. You knew Muhammad Ali better than most, Fred. You got to spend some time.
Yeah, it was a wonderful experience, both professionally and personally. I'd actually met him probably about 20 years earlier when he was doing a card show somewhere in the South Suburbs, and he conducted an interview there. But that was a much briefer exchange. But 1998, yes, I was able to accompany a small group of people, maybe about 7 people, and I was the only journalist in the group. And we're, as you said, visiting his former estate in Berrien Springs, Michigan. And this was in connection with a charity auction event, where he would sign, boxing gloves and chairs and other memorabilia to be sold at auction to raise money. And, I got to spend a few hours there with him and watch him do his magic tricks and tell some stories, and I had a chance to interview him. So it was a great day.
And you actually got in the ring with him, right, Fred?
Yeah, he invited each of us one by one to step into this new boxing ring that he had installed in his estate. And he was very proud and happy that day. And I broke journalistic protocol by taking part in that when he invited me to step in. And I've got a picture of him and me with our dukes up. And it's a proud photo I have.
Good job breaking journalistic integrity there, Fred. I completely support that. Not just then, at all times, or at least most of the time, it's okay. You, Fred, how do you boil it all together when you look at a guy who many people did not like in the 1960s? They thought he's, braggadocious African-American guy, and then, you get to the Olympics in 1996 in Atlanta, and it's like he's lighting the flame, and he's the most beloved figure maybe in the history of sports in this country. Like we had Rick Tellinger on yesterday, and he was saying that part of it was that Ali wasn't scary anymore. He was, you know, he had Parkinson's. He'd been emasculated. He's not gonna, you know, he's not gonna punch you in the face anymore. He's not gonna be able to speak out. So it was like easier to love him then. How do you kind of put that all together?
Well, I think you know, having lived through the 60s and 70s, as I did, and so many people who revere him did, realized that he had the audacity as well as the confidence to stand up to so-called authority, which was pretty much unheard of, particularly in that era for an African American man. And he said, no, I'm not going to take part in a Vietnam War that I don't believe is right, and it contradicts my religious beliefs. And I think a lot of people have felt that they would like to have the nerve, I guess, to say that to whoever their authority was. So I think people respected him for being able to do that. And obviously he had the platform of being the world champion to give him a little more veracity.
The great Fred Mitchell joining us here on 720 WGN. Fred, is that what kind of started his making, what made him so impactful on social issues throughout the years? Because that continued on to, I mean, basically today. I remember a statement he released in December on Donald Trump and some of the things he was saying about Muslims. And it seemed like throughout this entire time, Muhammad Ali has just been such an impactful figure on very important social issues in this country.
Yeah, no question. There's always this tremendous intersection, I think, between politics and religion and sports, particularly professional sports. And he was able to connect the dots, so to speak, and get people to step up and recognize who he was and what he meant. You know, when I think back to the 60s, the late 60s in particular, there was so much going on in this world, and certainly in America, with the assassinations of Dr. Martin Luther King and Bobby Kennedy, the race riots, the total upheaval, the Vietnam War going on. There was so much going on at that time. And when you look into the sports world, you know, this is right before free agency was a part of a professional sport. So athletes prior to that were restricted to stay, you know, except the salaries that the incumbent team had to give them, and they didn't have much leverage. So the confluence of all these things happening at that time, and to have the heavyweight champion of the world speak out in the manner, the bold manner that he did, I think gave a lot of impetus to a lot of people and a voice to a lot of people who otherwise would not be able to speak out.
Fred, what did you think of the way he treated Joe Frazier? I mean, did you kind of view it like he was just trying to do that to get an edge, even though it was uncomfortable? I mean, what was your angle on that?
Yeah, it was uncomfortable, and I think a lot of people probably felt that way. And that, you know, was part of the complex nature of Ali's personality and his whole image, I guess you would say, that there's some conflict there as far as what people appreciated about him and whether he crossed the line. There was so much showmanship in what he did, and he knew that he had the ability to do that. He had the ability to stand up to Howard Cosell, who at that time was the, you know, the final word, so to speak, when it comes to sports journalism. And so, yeah, he was certainly different. You question some of the things he did, but as an athlete, the bottom line is winning, and he certainly did that.
You can find it on ChicagoTribune.com. It's titled My Day with Muhammad Ali in Michigan. Fred Mitchell wrote it, and it's a must-read. Going back to that day, Fred, Where does that rank? I mean, you've done you did a lot of cool things in your career. Where does that rank among all the different events and games and things that you saw during your career as a sports writer?
Yeah, it's got to rank probably at the top. You know, I was thinking about that the other day. All the I've covered probably 14 or 15 Super Bowls and a bunch of World Series and NBA Finals and Stanley Cups and the Olympics. And met some luminaries, like from George Halas to Jesse Owens and Gale Sayers, on and on, Tiger Woods. But there's something different about meeting Ali and having a personalized encounter with him. I think that had a lot to do with making it different. And you look on the social media last couple of days and. You hear anecdotes from people who happened to bump into him and he spoke to them or spent time with them or posed with a picture with them. He had a way with people to make them feel important and that he has known them for a long, long time. And that's something that's missing perhaps even more nowadays from prominent athletes to have that ability to, just cross over and make people feel like family almost. So this was a unique experience for me, as it has been for anybody else who had the good fortune to spend some time with them.
That's interesting that as far as the athlete today connecting and making you feel at home. I was thinking, and Fred Mitchell with us from the Chicago Tribune, great stuff today all over the Trib, including Fred's piece. If you want to pick up the entire paper, read it online, whatever, just really some great stuff in here in Fred's piece about his day spending in Michigan. I'm wondering, Fred, I know to each his own, but if you were advising athletes who rise to a Michael Jordan or LeBron James or Muhammad Ali, maybe the biggest level, do you want them from your seat to speak out on social issues? Because when I think that platform is just sitting right there and you can do so much good, but a lot of guys, it's just not for them.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I don't think you can force that responsibility on anybody. If it's not within your personality, that's fine. I've always felt that actions speak louder than words, and the way you carry yourself with integrity, the way you handle yourself, not only when the cameras are shining on you, I think that speaks louder than anything that you can come out and say, particularly in this day and age where, everybody's actions are captured by fans as well as media. Everybody sees everything that you do. So it's difficult to escape that, and you can't be hypocritical as far as what you say and what you do. But having said that, I understand that professional athletes today are businessmen above all else, and there's always a concern about offending a certain aspect of society. It's almost like political in those terms. But, as a journalist, you wish that athletes would speak out on things that they see and that they feel are wrong, and that they have to know that they have that platform to be able to do that, particularly during their playing days.
Fred, great stuff and great to talk to you today. Just as we let you go here, your favorite thing about Ali that you will remember the most?
Yeah, just his I think his sense of humor, even when I visited him in 1998, he was big, the ravages of his Parkinson's disease were not as nearly as bad as they were, later in life. But he still had issues with the motor skills and conversing. But during that interview, he and his personal assistant and his wife pulled a prank on me. We sat down to conduct the formal part of the interview, and he closed his eyes as if he were asleep, had fallen asleep. And his assistant said, he's got narcolepsy and sometimes falls asleep in the middle of the day. So I bought it, and seconds later he opened his eyes and lunged at me and said, "Boo!" And, he had done the same thing to Ed Bradley, the former 60 Minutes reporter. Right. Yes. So the point is, he always had the sense of humor, even when he was unable to articulate verbally, what he wanted to say. Just his expressions and his actions and magic tricks and ability to once again connect with people. That's what I'll remember most about him. And he was a good spirit. And I almost feel like we lost him years ago in terms of his inability to communicate with everyone. But certainly the essence of him will be what we remember about him, both in the ring and out of the ring. And that's something that I'll hold on to the rest of my life.
Fred, it was a great piece in the Tribune, and we appreciate you coming on and talking to us. Miss seeing you around Hallis Hall, and it was great talking to you.
My pleasure. Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
Fred Mitchell, the great Fred Mitchell, formerly of the Chicago Tribune and still appearing in the Trib. He's now off and retired. Great career for Fred Mitchell.
No doubt about it. That's what an awesome experience. Want to get in the ring with me, yeah. Fred? How cool is that?
Absolutely. Would love to. When we come back, some scary NFL news, actually, and a close call for an NFL player who maybe got a little bit lucky. Not all the details out yet, but this is a story just breaking. We'll tell you about it next. This is The Beat on 720 WGN.
Thanks to Fred Mitchell, writing today in the Chicago Tribune, the Hall of Famer, speaking to Muhammad Ali. You want to weigh in on the greatest, feel free. Your thoughts, a little tribute to Muhammad. We have some time for you. 312-981-7200. There is some breaking NFL news off the field.
Yeah, this is from the Dallas Morning News. Denver Broncos cornerback Aqib Talib was reportedly one of two people who were shot during a fight overnight at a Stebbins Corridor nightclub. This is in Dallas. A customer pulled a gun and shot one person inside the V Live Club on Empire Central Drive near I-35. Dallas police said another person was wounded outside the club as the fight continued. Those two victims were taken to a hospital with non-life-threatening injuries. Police are looking for others involved. So Aqib Talib, okay. He suffered a leg wound. Further details not immediately available, but Aqib Talib, very talented cornerback for the Denver Broncos, shot in the leg. Going to be okay. In fact, Adam Schefter reported that he was already discharged from the hospital. But close call, and certainly I imagine there's going to be more details that come out here that...
Right. Well, at the end of the day, it's just whether it's Aqib Talib or whoever, you hear these stories and you just wonder why would guys put themselves in that position. I don't know, that's a little bit...
He has some past history, too. He had a charge of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon that was eventually dropped.
Right. Well, how was your time this week out at OTAs, sir? Any highlights that you would like to report?
Somewhat uneventful. I talked to Hronis Gersou, the Bears center, and wrote about this on WGNradio.com. You can read about it. I believe Hronis Gersou is kind of the biggest domino to fall on the offensive line in training camp. They need somebody to emerge as their top center, and it kind of fits the whole offensive line together. And I would... I just think that's something close to something that you should watch closely in training camp. I talked to Hronis, and if you want to catch that interview, it appeared in our podcast this week, Intentional Grounding, which you can also find on WGNradio.com.
Very cool. We'll do some Ali talk right after the news. So if you are on hold, we will get to you. 312-981-7200, as we have done a little bit of a tribute all weekend long to the greatest of all time. And we'll, of course, keep you up to date on the baseball as well. 720 WGN News in 2 minutes.
He's on a groovy trip. Yeah. Oh, he's the greatest, you better know it. Yeah, the Louisville Lift.
He went over to London.
A little tribute for Muhammad Ali, the champ, the greatest of all time. I'm Mark Carmen. He is Adam Hogue. Dan Long producing the program. Still working on Dan Long's nickname, which we talked about yesterday.
I heard about that.
I'm still uncomfortable.
Sounds like it.
We'll have to have a conversation with upper management before we proceed about that. Your phone calls are welcome right now. Tribute to Muhammad Ali. If you ever ran into him or just want to say how he impacted you, 312-981-7200. I've got two older brothers plus that are 20 and 15 years older than me, so they were growing up right in the Ali era, and you know, my father as well. Just, I mean, there's so much love in my family for Ali that for some reason I just feel connected to him more than maybe some people my age do. I don't know if that makes sense, outside of the fact that, you know, I've watched a million clips and been so entertained by him. And somebody who sticks to their beliefs like he did, that just is, it's amazingly impressive is what it is. And I wish that I had had the experience that so many of our media brethren have had in this town of meeting him. That was not the case for myself. You obviously never met him either.
No, I did not.
You deserve to.
To me, the big memory that I have is that 96 Olympics.
Yeah, that was a great moment. Right. It was incredibly cool. All right, Duncan, you're on 720 WGN, 312-981-7200. Go ahead.
Yeah, they were having a fundraiser at Maywood Park one night with the harness races, and Muhammad Ali was there, and he was kind enough to come down to the paddock, look at all the horses and meet all the drivers, and we all got to shake his hand, and he was really, really cool. I mean, he just made a couple of jokes with a couple of guys. You know, they threw a couple of punches, and it was really, really fun, and he was down there for 10 minutes, and we all got to meet him, and it was an honor to have shook his hand and met him. That's all I get to say.
Were you working there at the time, Duncan? Is that how you were?
I was a driver at the time. Yeah, I was driving horses at Maywood.
Wow, I want to bet on you, Duncan.
Yeah, I don't think so anymore. I'm the same age as Muhammad Ali. You don't want to bet on me anymore.
That's an awesome story, man. I appreciate you calling in.
Yeah, he's a great guy. I mean, he came down and spent, you know, at least 10 minutes, looked at all the horses and thought it was pretty cool and just very nice. So.
All right. Thanks, Duncan. Appreciate you.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah, thank you, sir. 312-981-7200.
He probably picked the winners, too.
How about that? Duncan calling in, who was riding horses at Maywood Park. That's a man of history right there.
Absolutely.
Did you ever go to Maywood, put a couple dollars down?
Driven by it many times. Never been in.
Yeah. It's always tomorrow.
Still sitting there.
Is it still sitting there?
Yeah.
Okay. The horses and me, I haven't been in a long time. Used to go to Arlington in high school. Long time ago.
We got to go to Arlington.
I'd go to Arlington. I would. Pam, you're on 720 WGN. Go ahead. 312-981-7200.
Hi. Can you hear me?
We can, Pam.
Okay, thank you. I ran into Muhammad Ali and his family in a little restaurant in St. Joseph, Michigan, about, I don't know, 10, maybe 15 years ago. He wasn't able to speak, but after their dinner, I asked if I could get his autograph, and the only paper I had was my checkbook. And so I just ripped a check out, turned it over on the back, and just said, oh, just sign here if you would. When he looked at me and he turned the check over, and he wrote it out for $5,000 and handed it back to me and just kind of smiled, that sweet little smile. And I thought that was just so funny. He couldn't talk, and it was really shaky. But on the way out of the restaurant, when they left, he did a magic trick with a little silk scarf. So that was just an important day for me.
Why would you call it important, Pam? That's an interesting word choice.
He's so iconic. I mean, I can remember when they called him a draft dodger, and my father was in the Air Force, and it was a very negative thing at one time, but he outgrew it, and he overcame it. He was an important man.
Yeah,
I think.
No question.
In more than one way.
No doubt. Thanks, Pam. Appreciate you. 312-981-7200. That story. He was still in there, man. You know, you get Parkinson's.
Yeah.
He's still in there. That just sucks. Really, really sucks.
Well, yeah, because it kind of held back the words that you wanted to hear from. But that's why I go back to those statements that he would still make from time to time.
Right.
And, you know, I got a lot of responses on Twitter. Oh, it's not really him writing it. It's not really. It's like.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, it is. he's still
he's in there.
He's in there. And yeah, as Fred Mitchell kind of said to us, you know, it sort of feels like we lost him way before Friday night, but yeah, that part of it's always going to suck.
I watched one video where he was talking about, they asked him, what are you going to do after you're done boxing? What's your plan for the next however many years? And he's like, I'm going to get ready to meet God. And he starts talking about, he's like, if somebody told you that this microphone that you're speaking into or this computer screen that you're looking at, man created that, right? Yes. He's like, well, how come when you look at the trees or you look at the grass that people don't think that somebody created that, that just happened? He's like, and you know, I think we're all going to be judged one day, and I don't, you know, I'd like to spend the rest of my life in heaven and not. And so, but whether you agree with that or not, he went about living his life. He's talking about all these people that he was connecting with. He went about his life being a great person. Now you can say his early stuff about Joe Frazier and calling him an Uncle Tom and get the gorilla in Manila and all that stuff is super uncomfortable. But to me, that was gamesmanship. That was him being braggadocious and trying to be the best, you know, the champ. Which, again, it's not perfect, but I think there's a pretty clear understanding as to why he was doing that. He's not insulting. Is he really insulting his own people? I don't think that's what it was about at all. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, absolutely. It makes sense. I mean, I'm way too young to like really make any kind of intelligent comment on that part of it. just be completely honest on that. I mean, that part of it is like, I just don't have much. Any memories of that? And unfortunately, I wish I did. Now, I've gone back, including in the last 48 hours, and watched, you know, all countless videos and all that. But to me, it's always been the important. And it doesn't mean he hasn't had an impact on me. That's the point I'm making. It's like he still has. I mean, whether it's just like a statement on Donald Trump 5 months ago or periodic interviews before he couldn't talk anymore, or like I mentioned, the Olympics in 96, what always stands out to me in my head just as like a memory I have, and can't really remember the specifics of it, but certainly remember him standing there with the torch, and that was I think a very symbolic and impactful moment.
I mean, it's a great thing to look at too, just how do you treat your fellow man. I mean, he had that one down in his later years for sure. 312-981-7200. Carl, talking Muhammad Ali on 720 WGN. Go ahead, Carl.
Yeah, years ago when Ali was in trouble, actually his name was Cassius Clay at the time.
Right.
And he was considered a draft dodger. A lot of people were very bitter, and I was working with a black man who's a friend of mine, and I'm white. And I made a comment about him dodging the draft, you know. And the guy really got mad at me and never talked to me after that. And I learned from that thing on that how bitter a lot of blacks were, and I can't blame them, you know, because they always got the raw end of it, you know, generally did. And that's my experience with Cassius Clay / Muhammad Ali.
Well, and Carl, I appreciate it. Listen, the guy won an Olympic gold medal in 1960, and then he went to eat at an all-white restaurant and was banned, and he threw the medal into the river, which I think we could all understand, right? I mean, here I am, I'm competing for the country, yet I can't go eat at a restaurant in this country.
Right.
I mean, how can you... I mean, I don't see how you could ever fault somebody for having a bitter feeling around that. But he went about trying to make the world a better place. And as far as, like, the Vietnam thing... He gave up 3.5 years in his prime. He went to prison. He gave up earnings. It wasn't like he was just, and he wasn't gonna. It wasn't like he was gonna go be put into battle. He would have been given whatever ceremonial spot in the army, but he wasn't willing to do it. He was a man of principle.
Well, he was making a statement,
right? And by the way, it was a statement that many, many, many people at the time completely agreed with. White or black, people did not think that we should have been. In that war. 312-981-7200 is the phone number at 720 WGN.
The Cubs are on the verge of losing a baseball game. This is major news. And if I'm you, Mark Harmon, I'd be worried about October. Will this loss, and by the way, they have a runner on first and the game's not over yet, but how will this loss impact the playoff push?
Well, you know, you make a very interesting point here, Adam, that and it's a good mock of my meltdown when the Cubs did lose three games in a row and 4 or 5, and I thought that we were going to be in for a struggle. All, you know, it was going to kind of come back to the pack, but that clearly hasn't happened as they're back on pace to winning 117 games, 22 games over 500, the best team that's ever played baseball. But it's like a very – we're going to hear from Jed Hoyer in a second here. I sat down – or, well, I stood with Jed out at Wrigley earlier this week. It's just a weird phenomenon, I think, for Cub fans right now. I don't ever remember – even like in 2008, and they did lose today. So let me just take
3-2 final over at Wrigley, Arizona, salvaging a game against the Chicago Cubs, and they don't. By the way, what the heck is Arizona doing with their uniforms this year?
I kind of like them.
No,
what don't you like about every?
They
what?
Have like seven different, like the Oregon Ducks of Major League Baseball. There's a weird teal with red and black, and they're different every day. Don't like them.
To me, they look hip and cool, and they're trying to connect with the youth of America.
Dark gray instead of regular gray. You can hardly even read the letters on the back.
Yeah, well, the Diamondbacks have got to do something. This is a huge loss today, Adam. 3-2.
Yeah.
You know, it's always tough to lose by a run. Now you got to go on the road to Philly for 3 tomorrow. Then you're in Atlanta.
Well, Arrieta pitched today, right?
And that's right.
So if there's any... Okay. That's really the only reason why the loss would be significant at all.
I mean, I was being sarcastic.
Yeah, but you shouldn't lose when... just like the White Sox shouldn't lose when Sale pitches. But they have lately.
Jake Arrieta... let's see here. Did Arrieta take the loss? I'm not even sure. Let me hang on one second.
They were losing.
I believe he did.
When he was still in, so I think he did. That's 2 in a row, right?
Jake Arrieta today, 5 innings, 9 hits, 3 runs, all earned. He struck out 12, 108 pitches. So, yes, Jake Arrieta takes the loss. His first loss of the year, now 9-1.
That's 2 straight games the Cubs have lost with him pitching. Because didn't those last one end that streak?
Well, now we got problems.
Season's over.
Travis Wood pitched again today. When his arm falls off, I'll just let it be known that Carm said his arm is going to fall off. Guys,
His arm falls off, that will be a news story.
Yeah. So, Arrieta the loss, Cubs fall to 39-16. I said 37-15 a second ago. I'm sorry, it was 39-15. They're 39-16.
Remember, like
now.
A month ago when there was the Cubs and Sox were separated by like one win.
Yes. Yes, yeah, I do.
And that was fun.
Yeah. Well, here.
For a minute.
312-981-7200. Cubs panic right now. Cubs panic. 3-2 loss. Dan Long, you're a diehard Cub fan. You panicking after a loss to the Diamondbacks?
Now, 39-16 is still looking pretty good to me.
Right. Okay. Yeah,
okay.
Dexter Fowler was 0-for-4 today. Dropped his average to .303.
I want to hear your convo with Jed.
You want to hear the convo with Jed?
I do.
All right. Here we go. Jed Hoyer, this was Wednesday night when I also interviewed Craig Sager, who is battling cancer, a TNT sideline reporter. If you missed that, please or feel free to go to our website, WGNradio.com. It's in the sports tab under one-on-one, a little one-on-one with Craig Sager. But this was Jed Hoyer, Cubs GM. Actually, I started out with baseball's moving the strike zone, or that's what they want to do, lifting it up so there's more action. So that's sort of where we started here. Jed Hoyer at Wrigley Field earlier in the week. All right, with the Cubs general manager, Jed Hoyer, I want to ask you an overall baseball question just on the strike zone, raising it to the top of the knee. What are your thoughts?
You know, I understand the logic a little bit. I don't really like the idea of messing with what players know. There's so much nuance that goes with the strike zone for hitters and pitchers, and what may seem like an insignificant change actually might be pretty significant to a player's approach, a pitcher's approach. For guys to have to change that dramatically, I feel like, you know, to me, I think the unintended consequences of that could be pretty big. So it's above my pay grade, but that's my biggest thought.
Are you hearing from guys at all saying what's going on here?
Not a lot. I think we'll have some clarity on that at some point, but not so much yet.
Right. Now, they want, I guess, more action, but yet they also want to speed the game up. If you get more action, you think you're going to have 3.5-hour games.
Well, I will say I'm a big proponent of trying to figure out ways to score more runs. I mean, I think that there are times with guys, so many guys throwing 100 miles an hour now and stuff that the ball's not in play enough, and I think that's one of the biggest things is that the more the ball is in play, the more action for the fans. It used to be, go back to the 60s and 70s, and obviously earlier as well, a lot of guys swung the bat early in counts. The ball was in play. The games were shorter. We've gotten away from that to a more deeper count culture. Guys see more pitches. They walk more. They strike out more. Now you add in better stuff to that, and you get a lot of at-bats late in the game that end in strikeouts. And, it's not that fun if the 7th, 8th, and 9th inning, the ball's in play, twice in 9 outs. So I understand the logic of that. But at the same time, I also think, significant changes can be difficult.
So real quick on the team, you're 20 over. I'm guessing you didn't think you'd be quite in this spot, but I also don't think you probably feel like you've overachieved. Like, how do you boil that all together?
Yeah, it's a great way to put it. I think if someone had said, hey, you're going to be 35-15 at this point, I think you obviously would have been elated. But at the same time, I think we're a really good team. I think we have talent in all areas. We have great guys. They compete every night. So I'm not the least bit surprised by it, but at the same time, I don't think that's something you could ever expect.
MVP of the team right now, can you even garner a choice on that?
Yeah, we have a bunch of guys that are candidates, and I think that Dexter set the table for us all year. He's been terrific. Zobrist this last month especially has been incredible for us. And then I think Jake, the way he's pitched has been fantastic. There's a lot of candidates. Chris Bryant, the way he moves around the field for a star player is amazing. So we have a lot of guys that are candidates, and I think one of the best things about the team is that we have other guys that I know we're going to have monster second halves or a monster last 112 games, and I think that's a good feeling.
Jed, appreciate it.
All right.
Thanks, Tim.
Thanks, Mark.
There you go, Jed Hoyer, earlier in the week, who is the Cubs MVP? I think that's a tough question.
That was my first observation, or biggest observation from that interview. By the way, great job.
Thanks, Adam.
It was a good conversation. I enjoyed the baseball.
Well, and I want to
get some of that too. Yeah. But in terms of the MVP, a lot of people would listen to that and say, "Oh, he's dodging the question." But like, legitimately, those are all candidates that you could argue and make a case for each and every one. And to me, it goes back every time I look at Dexter Fowler and I go, "That dude was on the Orioles."
He was
like he was reportedly in Baltimore signing the contract, and meanwhile, oh hey, here he is in Mesa, Arizona, just walking on the field. By the way, we stole him back, and he's here, and he's such an important player. It's crazy.
Yeah, they absolutely did not think that was going to happen. I mean, the Cubs don't have a draft pick in the upcoming draft here until number 104. They expected that Fowler was going to be signed by another team so they would get a compensation pick there, which, by the way, that's not a huge deal right now when you're 39-16 and you've got a ton of young talent. But they absolutely thought that Fowler was going to be elsewhere. And I didn't realize that Ben Zobrist is Babe Ruth. I mean, the guy has been unbelievable.
Well, he has.
He's been that guy also, when you wonder about guys in October when it gets cold and it's harder to hit and you're going against elite pitching, Ben Zobrist is the exact guy you want at that time of year, and they didn't have that last year, and it showed against the New York Mets.
Quick point, though, on your conversation with him about the rule changes, and there's all this talk about speeding up the game, and yet you're trying to add more offense, and it seems like it's a little bit hypocritical, right? Darren Jackson made a great point the other day listening to the White Sox game. He was talking about in Detroit, they moved the walls in.
Mm-hmm.
That used to be one of the biggest ballparks in baseball, and they had like a triples alley. I don't know if you remember, but they had like one of the gaps was like, you hit it in that gap, even if you weren't all that fast, you had a good chance at a triple, and triples are exciting too. And plays at third base, trying to stretch a double and a triple, those are action plays. And so everyone is so, oh, we got to move the walls in and make more home runs. I think Jed Hoyer was kind of thinking one step ahead. Like, you got to think about the unintended consequences sometimes. Yeah, okay, more home runs, but You can have home run left field, right field, center field, in the gaps, everywhere. It's kind of cool in some of these ballparks to have a spot where, oh, we're going to have some exciting plays around the bases, too. It doesn't always have to be all about home runs.
Well, they just
but as Jed said, you got to put the ball in play.
Well, that's what baseball wants. They want to raise it off the bottom of the knee, figuring you lift the ball more into the zone. Pitchers have to come to you. Well, then there's just going to be more action, and people aren't going to be able to sit there. And
but if they're swinging earlier in the count, it's going to reduce the amount of pitches.
Right. Which, okay, so
the point is it's hard to kind of. Baseball is a weird sport that you can't just say, "Oh, we're going to do this, and it's going to shorten games."
No, right?
It's too unpredictable. In some years, the pace of play goes up. Sometimes it goes down, and really, it's just sort of random.
Simple question for you: 312-981-7200. Is the game boring right now? Too many strikeouts, too many walks. You're sitting there, nothing happens. It's a 1-0. It's a 2-0 game. You're falling asleep. I talked to prominent media guy, we could share this after the news, who's like, listen, I cover the game. I'm bored. I mean, that's going on.
They sit in the press box every day?
Yeah.
Okay, that's different.
Well, but these guys, loves baseball.
I love baseball. You know how much I love baseball. And sitting up there every day, it just becomes repetitive. Baseball's more of like this romantic game where we'll get to more of that.
Yeah. Do we need more action for the game? We lose!
Chicago Sports, spoken here. The beat is on.
720 WGN, WGNradio.com.
It's Adam Hogan, Mark Carman today till 6 o'clock right here on 720 WGN. Want to get back to some of that baseball conversation we're having. I find it interesting if games are getting boring or not and have some thoughts on it. We'll share that in a moment. I also have something. I have to share something I saw on my way into the studio today.
Angry Hogue coming up.
Yeah, it'll be coming. As somebody who knows Angry Hogue very well is on the phone line right now. He's usually sitting in studio with us on Sundays, but he's pulling double duty over at WGN TV today, and you catch him on Sports Feed on CLTV later on at 6 o'clock. Carmen, I don't know if you know this, but his name's Jared Payton, and he is the son of Walter Payton, who he wore number 34 and ran with the football a lot for the Chicago Bears.
I remember 34. I used to do this thing called Payton Over the Top into my couch, and it was a great okay. great memory from my childhood.
Going from the back of the couch over landing into the cushions.
It was a big blue couch, kind of a high armrest, and I would dive over that thing, Payton over the top, try to get parallel to the ground, and then just jam the shoulder into the couch.
Your thoughts, JP?
What's up, fellas? I actually used to do that as well. I broke about 4 or 5 couches in my household, so my mom was pretty upset. My dad was cool with it because I was still playing soccer at the time, so he maybe held out hope that maybe one day I might pick up a football, and it was just one of those times where I know exactly how you feel, but that's funny that you say that, because I hear people all the time tell me that that's what they used to do at their house, because my dad used to jump over people, and it's pretty amazing to hear that Carm actually had a little bit of lift to get over that blue couch.
Well, hang on now. Copay couldn't have been too upset. I'm doing what daddy does.
Yeah, when she's going and then, taking the credit card out to go get a new couch, she's kind of upset with me.
Well, JP, we wanted to make sure we got you on at some point today to talk about some of the stories of your dad with Muhammad Ali, as we continue to remember Muhammad Ali this weekend. Know you got to have at least a couple stories involving your father and the greatest.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing because it's, nowadays with the internet, how we have all these pictures, but that picture that circulates around that I post probably every single year of my 34 days of sweetness that I do before a bear start, and then to see it like kind of circulate this past weekend, and it's unbelievable. My dad and Muhammad Ali back in 77 at an event, and him kind of putting his fist up right in my dad's face, and my dad's laughing, and to see both those guys, I look at that picture that I saw, and I always say, can you imagine what their conversation was like? Like, what do you talk about? And what could you imagine, like, two of the greats to kind of just talk about at that moment? Probably nothing to do with sports, just probably about life. But they were pretty close. And my dad spent you know, time. And if he didn't see him all the time, I know that they kept up through, you know, phone calls and letters and stuff like that. So it was always pretty cool. And it's kind of like a brotherhood, I guess, when you're that good at sports. I guess nobody really understands what you probably go through except for, you know, people that are in your situation. So there was a time back in 96 when we went to the Olympics in Atlanta, and we were there, and my dad just wanted to go to see basketball. He's a huge basketball fan, so he wanted to go and kind of see Mike and all this other stuff. So it was a cool time, but we were sitting down, and it was at half, and all I see is a sea of people just start standing up. And as they start standing up, I'm wondering what is going on, and my dad and I are still sitting down. And people are whispers are coming, and then it's Muhammad Ali walking down the steps to with Spike Lee right behind him, and they come up to our row, and my dad, like, looks up, stands up, and gives him a smile, walked over, gave him a hug, and they started, he was just sitting there. And they were just sitting there. No one was saying much, but all these people were taking pictures. And I think that was the first time I really understood and kind of grasped what paparazzi was with all these cameras, because no one had cell phones at that time. It was all, you know, disposable cameras, and people were just taking pics. And there was that moment where I figured out, like, man, like, this is, like, my dad's like, he's big time, man. Like, people are freaking out over all of them. But it was one of those moments that I kept with me for my entire life. And this past week, I was cleaning out my basement, going through some stuff, and actually found the autographed boxing gloves that he sent me back in 2010. And I'm actually in the process of putting those in a glass case, and they're going to be up in my new basement downstairs, just to have that as a remembrance of just the greatness of Muhammad Ali and what he did, not just as an athlete, but also as a person as well, and how he impacted, you know, my life and the way that he motivated me through his quotes and things that I've read and also videos that I've seen. It doesn't matter. He transcends sports. It doesn't matter if you play a sport that, you know, if it's football or soccer, his motivation kind of carried me through a lot of the stuff that I went through later on in life.
So you've got a boxing glove from Muhammad Ali signed to you, correct?
Yeah, signed to me first and last name, and sent to my mom's house. And you know, I got home, and mom's like, oh, you have something here. It was sent from Muhammad Ali. That's what it says. I was like, what? What are you talking about? Like, only mail that I ever got was, like, my, you know, the late notice on my cell phone bill and, you know, a couple of tickets of running through the iPass when I didn't have my clicker on. And to see, you know, that boxing glove, it was pretty cool. And they always kept up. We have close family friends, so it was pretty cool to see how sometimes he would keep up with, you know, what everybody was doing. And I guess that's what happens. And when you're close like that, you get the holiday card. So anytime you get holiday cards from people, you think you're exchanging with people. It's pretty cool to be able to know that he was a family friend.
What was your dad's thoughts on athletes speaking out and being, you know, in the spotlight on social issues?
You know, it's kind of weird because I think about that. My dad was in one of the first high schools to be integrated back in the day in Mississippi. And, you know, a lot of stuff went down in Mississippi at that time with, you know, a lot of tension and racial tension going on. And he wasn't the biggest speaker on those issues, but he found a way to be able, his goal was, you know, kind of to bring people together. And I think him playing football for, you know, for 60 minutes would keep people together in the town and kind of bring them together. And he wasn't opposed to it. It just wasn't his thing. Because I don't know if you guys remember when they did the football life when my grandpa passed, there was a lot of stuff where people wanted him to speak out about, you know, things that were going on and how the situation was handled with my grandpa. And he decided not to and just kind of went on and went on with his life and did what he had to do. And it's but he was never opposed to it. And I think he always looked at Muhammad Ali as a guy who stood up for everything that he believed, and everything that he would say was something that he was doing. So, it's pretty cool to kind of see how someone like that can have the big stage and still be able to speak their mind on issues that are going on in our society and in our world.
JP, what's coming up on Sports Feed tonight?
sports feed tonight, man. It is going to be a great night. We have Terry Kinewitz coming on with us, our oldest friend. He'll be on with us to talk a little bit of everything, and then Eddie Volkman will be on as well. He's got a new radio show, so we'll be talking with him. You know, I'm still going back to my days, you know, listening to him when he was on B96 doing, you know, playing all my old good music. So I'm going to sit down and talk with him as well, and that's really it tonight, man.
You got Harry and Eddie V on the same show?
Yeah, the same
playing the show, hits. Man.
And at the Carm tomorrow.
At the Carm tomorrow. I mean, they're not as big as the Carm, but, you know, when the Carm comes, we break out the champagne. That's awesome. When those other guys come, we just give them bottles of water. So I look forward to it. I miss being in the studio with you guys, man. I know you guys don't really like me that much, but still, I mean, it's always good to be there.
Oh, we miss you back, and we still polished your chair like we always do. So, you know, next week it'll be ready for you. 312 texting in JP. What a life JP has. He just finds autographed Ali gloves in his basement. Wow. That is your life. Most people would have that in a prime spot. Yeah, I just cleaned out my closet. Oh, it's an autographed glove from Muhammad Ali.
Well, let me just, I'll tell you guys this real quick. I know probably up against some, but my dad would used to go to all these events. And so what he would do was when he'd go to these events, he would call the guys beforehand and say, listen, bring me something signed to my son, or bring me something and I'll bring you something. So they would trade. So like I have a Mickey Mantle signed baseball that was signed to me. And when he met the Mick, and they exchanged like jerseys and stuff. So I have a lot of memorabilia that is just, man, it's unbelievable, priceless. I'll never get rid of it. And it's funny now, I'm trying to show my son, you know, pictures and videos of all these things, all these different pieces of memorabilia that I have, so they can be passed on to him down the line.
Well, really cool stories, JP. We miss you here today. We watch the sports feed later, and have a great show, buddy.
Who's winning tonight?
You guys are the best, man.
Who's winning tonight? Yeah. Cavs, Warriors.
I'm going with the Cavs, man. I just, LeBron in game two, it's something. It's still going to be hard. They got to find a way to be able to get him and Love. LeBron needs to get Love just down in the post a little bit more early on, get him comfortable. But I'm going with the Cavs tonight.
All right. I like it. We're going to talk some NBA Finals about 5:30. JP, have a great show. Good to talk to you, man.
All right, guys.
It's Jared Payton over at CLTV.
He's always got something cool. Seriously. Oh, yeah, just some Muhammad Ali gloves got sent.
No, I was, you know, looking at his Twitter the other day, and there it was, well, whatever, I logged into Twitter yesterday morning, and the first thing I saw was a picture of Muhammad Ali in an autograph glove to Jared Payton, which is amazing.
Yeah. Hey, by the way, someone's mad at you for comparing Ben Zobrist to Babe Ruth.
Come on. They're
3-1. What are you doing?
3-1-4.
What are you doing over there?
Relax.
Comparing Ben Zobrist to Babe Ruth.
You got to get at the Carm being a little, you know, come on. I try to.
Babe Zobrist.
The point is that Ben Zobrist has been incredible. I understand he's not as good as Babe Ruth.
Yeah.
I don't believe me. I'm aware.
3-1-4.
Although, a couple more.
He wasn't really comparing him to Babe Ruth.
I kind of was.
Wow. Okay. I apologize, 314. Where was the 314?
Justin Kaufman was doing nicknames for Ben Zobrist the other night.
Okay.
So I'm coming out of the park. I'm listening to Justin. He's doing nicknames on Ben Zobrist. So I text him.
Oh, it's St. Louis. There you go.
Yeah. I text in Zomoney - Carmen. And he's like, he's just going through the text. He's like, Zomoney Carmen. Like, he didn't realize
Did he realize it later?
I don't think so. He just moved it along. So he's like,
so there you are. You're trying to put yourself in the nickname.
That's
what you were doing.
I was not doing that, but that's Zomoney Carmen. I'm like, oh, well, that's kind of a nickname I didn't think of, but
it's a great nickname, right?
I thought that, you know, Justin would like to hear from me during his show, so I threw in a Zomoney. And then I said, Carmen. Zomoney's a solid, because the guy is money, man.
When
it's on the line, Ben Zobrist, this guy's Zomoney. Mo money, Zomoney.
When we come back, can I share what I saw?
Yes.
On my way to work today?
Yes, you can. It's angry Adam Hogue.
I think it's not angry, just fair, observant. What are you doing, Adam Hogue?
I think it's angry Adam Hogue.
Okay, we'll find out next. It's 720 WGN. We'll be right back.
Adam Hogue went walking. We're about to hear about it right now. Who's this?
Eagle Eye Cherry?
Yeah, by...
That's the name of the band.
Oh.
Save Tonight Save is the Tonight. Track.
Yeah.
Ooh, I like...
This is like a good 90s jam.
That was a good musical lesson right there. Eagle Eye Cherry. Thinking only 10% of our listening public.
Is that a one-hit wonder, Dan?
I believe they were, yeah.
Yeah.
I couldn't name you another Eagle Eye Cherry track.
That's pure 90s right there. Okay, so I'm driving. No, I wasn't walking. I was driving in to work.
You're driving into the show
to
today.
The studio here.
Okay.
Tribune Tower. And I'm at the corner of LaSalle and Illinois.
Were you thinking about how excited you were to see me?
Not really.
First mistake. Okay. Okay, LaSalle and Illinois, I'm with you.
And I'm waiting at the red light, and someone's crossing the street, and it's this lady who's pushing a stroller with two dogs in it. Two small dogs, like the size of...
10-pound dogs? 20-pound dogs?
Probably 10 pounds. I mean, like the size of...
Chihuahua?
Like a burrito.
Size
like a
of
big burrito.
Like the size of Mike Jacobson?
Yeah, like Mike, the size of Mike Jacobson.
The jackal who weighs 10 pounds and drinks coffee and never eats. Although he disputes that. Go ahead.
I think Mike Jacobson has a Starbucks cup permanently glued to his left hand.
What's up, dude? That was actually Dan Levy. I'm sorry.
No, that was Jacobson.
Yeah. Yeah, I can't imitate Jacobson's voice. It's too elite for me to try to imitate it. Yes, he does have a Starbucks coffee always with him.
Okay. This wasn't like a kid's stroller. It was a stroller made for dogs.
Okay.
It said Dogger on it.
Like, right.
Which is, I'm assuming is a company.
So you put the dogs in. Was
so the dogs, two dogs, two small dogs in the stroller. And ladies pushing it.
You have a problem with this?
Well, isn't the point of walking a dog so that the dog walks? Now, well, I cannot confirm. Maybe the dogs didn't have feet.
Well, okay.
Like, maybe there's a chance the dogs couldn't walk.
All right, well, we need help here. 312-981-7200. Why would a dog ever be in a stroller? I'm assuming that perhaps the dog had already gone for a walk and the owner just wanted the dog to get more fresh air and maybe was going to walk at a pace that was a little too aggressive for the animal but still wanted to be with the animal. So it was
like, you got to understand, this was a legit stroller. That you would buy for a child, except it was made for dogs.
So
she's already invested the money, so it's obviously a regular deal, and she's just enjoying her Sunday walking around with two dogs in a stroller.
Well, hold on a second. Are you suggesting that we should ban dog strollers? Is that what you're doing?
No, I'm not. I first of all, I didn't know they existed until about 3 hours ago.
So what do you want to have happen here? What's your goal? What's your vision of the dog stroller? 312-981-7200.
I don't know that I have a political platform on this issue, Mark Harmon. I noticed it. I questioned it. I'm looking for answers. Maybe there are legit answers.
Well,
again, if the dogs couldn't walk, then maybe I get it, but I'm guessing they can. And I thought the point of walking... And by the way, I own a dog. I don't hate dogs. I love dogs. I have a dog.
Right, no, I
don't particularly like walking the dog, have never put her in a stroller.
312-981-7200. Why would a dog be in a stroller? Adam Hogue is angry. Bonnie, you're on 720 WGN.
Hi, it's Bonnie.
Hello, Bonnie.
Hi. Why somebody would have a little stroller for little dogs, is exactly what you were talking about, that they can only walk so much
right.
because they're so little. And then you have to give them a rest. Yeah, you want your dogs to get the fresh air. And especially, I mean, at LaSalle in Illinois, it's kind of dangerous to have two tiny little dogs walking around.
Right, they could get killed. Hogue.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, they can get killed. But anyway, it's funny that you guys are in a discussion about this. I've been listening to your show so I could learn more about sports, so I could have more interesting things to talk to my brothers about. So I got hooked on the show, and I've really enjoyed it.
Thank you, Bonnie.
Thank you, Bonnie.
Did you learn anything today?
Did I what?
Did you learn anything from us today? I'm guessing the answer to that is no, but I'm hoping perhaps you did.
Yes, I did. JP, when he called in and talking about his dad and all the things, it just made me realize what a greater man he is. But you two talking together, because one of you really likes the Sox and one of you really likes the Cubs. I'm a Cubs fan. My brother is a superior White Sox fan, and he lives in Colorado. And we've been getting closer as we've been getting older. And so I really wanted to have, you know, improve our discussions. And it's really working.
Bonnie, you're awesome. Thank you so much for listening. I'm glad that it's working. I'm sorry to cut you off. I just wanted to get in a couple more calls here. Thank you, Bonnie. More people want to help you out here, Adam.
I'm not sure I'm buying.
You're buying what? What are you not
buying? A lot of issues there.
Okay, hold on.
If your dogs aren't capable of walking down LaSalle, then maybe you shouldn't have those dogs, or maybe you should live somewhere else.
Those dogs were capable. Now they're tired. Now they're getting fresh air.
Okay.
Kristen, you're on 720 WGN. Oops, I just did something wrong.
Crazier.
What just happened?
Hi, Kathy, you're on the air.
Hi, I'm just going to make you crazier.
Okay.
I bought one of those dog strollers, but I put my bird cage in it and my birds in it. And I have pocket peels, and we go for a walk.
Kathy, Carmen, are you going to defend this one?
No, I'm not going to defend. I'm just going to ask a question. Kathy, are you crazy, or would you consider yourself normal? I consider myself crazy. There's nothing wrong with being crazy, Kathy. Are you crazy or normal?
I'm a little bit crazy. Okay. I'm a crazy bird lady. That's okay, Kathy.
You admitting that. Then.
And you know what? The birds absolutely love being outside, and they sing.
That's because they belong outside.
Yeah, but she.
Well, cockatiels wouldn't survive out in
this
weather.
Fair point. Fair point.
Okay, Kathy, you keep doing what you do. You figure things out, and your birds love you. I know they do.
Yes, they do.
That's right. All right. Appreciate you, Kathy.
Birds love it outside. Yeah,
they're birds
because they're birds.
But Kathy, this is a controlled environment. Kathy, these are Kathy's pets, and they live a great life at Kathy's house, and they get to go out of the dog stroller in the bird cage. And walk around. 720 WGN.
Now back to the beat. 720 WGN.
Hope you're having a great Sunday afternoon. We're going to talk a little White Sox baseball. Scott Merkin, who does a great job, MLB.com. But
yay!
Quickly, White Sox lost again today. Cubs lost.
Yay!
quickly on the dog issue, Adam Hoke very upset with the dog stroller. Thinks that should be banned because he saw a dog in a stroller today when he was coming.
By the way, I didn't say that.
You sort of said that.
And I think our next caller brings up a point of where it's probably okay to use a dog stroller.
Yeah, get to Ron in 1 second, but just a couple texts here. 312, there are cat strollers too. Do I think they're crazy? Heck yes. So that sounds like someone on your side.
Yeah, that would be extra weird. Not as weird as the bird.
Well, because cats don't go for a walk, so if you want to take the cat outside...
You want to talk about bird torture? Taking a bird outside where it belongs, but keeping it in the cage.
I just don't get the bird as a pet.
Yeah, me neither. Like, let's start there.
I mean, it's making...
Then giving birds walks.
My cousins used to have birds for a pet. I always thought that the house was crazy enough as it was, and then they added in a bird. Not saying that there's anything wrong with a crazy house. Again, 773 texting in saying, I live in Edgewater. If guys could punt the dogs in Lake Michigan and never look back, a lot of women would have to relearn a lost art engagement, which seems a little bit unfair to the guy holding their own 100%.
Wait, what?
I think the 773 feels like he's not being able to engage with women because they're so into the dogs and not talking to him. But I think that our 773's got to own 100% of his own engagement. And even if the dog is there, you know, he's got to get himself seen and feel like he matters and all that type of stuff.
Someone tweeted a screenshot of one of the strollers.
Yes. $50. People are trying to help you out.
$50, and the one that this lady was pushing was a lot more extravagant than this one. That
I mean, 262 texting, I don't know if this is real or not. My neighbor has a snake. He walks it in a stroller. That can't be true. Scott Merkin in 1 second, but we do got to get Ron on the air with his dog that's got a torn ACL. Merk, I'm sure you want to hear this as you're waiting. Ron, what's wrong with your dog?
Well, it's not my dog. My dog, it was a 75-pound dog, had an ACL injury, and we could walk, but walk slowly. We have a neighbor who has a very small dog, and or actually two of them, and one of them developed an ACL injury, and she got a stroller and put it in so she could take the dogs for walks.
Yeah.
It was the only way she could get the other dog out.
Well, so, don't have any problem with that. That makes perfect sense.
Right.
Yeah. That's a good use of the stroller.
Ron, you could say, Adam, have some compassion. Be a little bit more understanding. Empathy.
Adam, have some compassion. Yeah. Have some empathy.
All right.
Walk in the dog's shoes.
Thank you, Ron.
Walk in the dog's shoes. Thank you, Ron. I appreciate it. Again, not the situation I saw today. Appreciate you trolling me, Carm.
That was the highlight of the show for me.
Dog with a torn ACL, okay to use a stroller. Walking down LaSalle with two healthy dogs, just chilling, that should be walking themselves.
You don't know 100% that that dog didn't have a torn ACL, that you're making a leap.
There are two of them. Chances are they both didn't have ACLs.
Maybe they
and again, I think we're talking about a plus $100 stroller here.
It's possible. Have you ever considered this, that they had a collision in the outfield? Those two dogs, just like J.B. Shuck and Jason Coates. That's why they had to be in the stroller. That leads us to our next guest.
Scott, before we get to the White Sox, because we don't have to be in a hurry to talk about them right now, your thoughts on dogs and strollers?
That was a masterful transition, by the way.
Thank you. Well, thank you. That's what I do here.
Thank you, Mark.
But dogs and strollers are a little weird. Here's the thing that I find weird. My middle brother, Jeff, has a dog. He's had dogs forever. And love them. They're part of the family. But I always do a double take when I see someone on Twitter say, so-and-so, going home to see so-and-so, they can't wait to see mommy. And I'm like, no, you're really not the dog's mom. You're the dog's friend. You're the dog's companion. You love the dog. I get it. It's a part of the family. But you didn't give birth to the dog, I'm guessing, for the most part. So I think dogs and the strollers fall in that same category. That love dogs, love all animals, God bless them all. But yeah, maybe it's because I'm not a dog owner, so I don't have that same connection.
That's most definitely what dog owners are saying. You must not have a dog because I am the dog's mommy. Mark.
I'll hear about it on Twitter. Yeah, that I don't know and so forth and so on. It'll be a nice change from what I have been hearing on Twitter. So that's good.
Yeah. So what have you been hearing on Twitter lately? I mean, anything going on?
Yeah, people don't seem to be overly thrilled right now with the 6-18 and. What is it, 2-10 stretch for the White Sox? It really is kind of amazing because I tweeted back when they were, 23-10, somewhere around there. Maybe they were 21-10 or 22-10. And I tweeted about, hey, they've now built up a little cushion where if they go into a slump, you're not fighting just to get back to 500 like they did last year. Thinking maybe, they'd go 2-8, 2-9, get 5 or 6 over and then kind of get right the ship. Did not think they would get back to one game over 500 as they are right now. It's a pretty amazing streaky stretch. But, the bottom line is, as Alex Vila talked about after the game, it's not like they're buried. They look like they played like they are, but they certainly are not. There's still more than 100 games left. Assuming Cleveland wins that game that's being delayed right now by rain, they're 3 games back and 4 games out on the loss come. It's still a long way to play in a lot of head-to-head games, but a lot of things have to change for them to get more than just, great additions like Rick Hahn made yesterday with James Shields to get this team back on track again.
He's Scott Merkin, who covers the White Sox for MLB.com. And one thing, Scott, I pointed out a lot is a lot of these, almost all of these games, have been close. They're very rarely being blown out. But I don't. How long can you keep saying that? I mean, at some point, we're running on 3, almost 4 weeks here of this slump. And I think that one point I made earlier in the show is I think last season as the Sox were sort of in the race and even it came down to the last week before the trade deadline, are they in it, are they not? At some point, it was like you just had to make the call that they weren't all that great of a team. And I realize that we're just getting to June here, but we are in kind of the second third of the season now. And I just wonder, at what point do you get into that conversation again where you have to really evaluate and say, how good is this baseball team?
Well, I can say last year, and I think the White Sox, with the higher-ups, would agree. I mean, that was not a good baseball team. And they had one really exceptional week, and they benefited from a second wild card that was not, ever taken over by one team and wasn't, a dominant team that ended up winning it. I think it was what Houston got it right and ended up playing well in the playoffs. But nonetheless, it wasn't a team that ran off and won 93, 94 games. If you had a team that did that, the Sox would have been, even without that seven-game winning streak up until the trade deadline, they would have been out of it. This year, I think they're a better team. And I think in fairness to them, yes, they played bad baseball. They found some very unique ways to win during the 6-18 stretch. And, you know, the close games a lot of times comes down to, you know, clutch hitting and bullpen, and that has been a big problem over this stretch. But, you know, they were really good for 33 games. So I guess, you know, until you see something different or until it gets to a point where it's too far to come back from, which I don't know what that point is exactly, I think you got to believe that somewhere in between is the real team. So maybe they're not a 13-game over 500 team, and they're not this bad a team. I can tell you that right now. But, you know, are they good enough to be 85, 86, 87 and contend? Because I think that would put them in contention for some sort of playoff spot in the American League.
Merck, Sox fans always want to talk about the manager, which I guess is not unlike a lot of teams in baseball. If this tailspin continues, say they get to five games under, could you envision a change being made?
Well, you know, it's true. I think the default argument, and I get it, that the team has not been good for a while, and then when the team was good, they faded in the last week. I think the default argument is the manager, the coach. You know, as everyone who knows me or has ever heard me or read me knows, I'm, you know, a Michigan graduate, Michigan fan. And, you know, Brady Hoke, his first year, man, I thought that was the answer. That was the greatest coach ever, won the Sugar Bowl. And then, you know, for the next couple of years, you say, okay, he's not very good. Then you start saying, gotta go. And he finally had that one moment when, you know, the kid who appeared to be concussed went back in the game that you thought, okay, you got to make a change. I'm not sure if that moment, I know a lot of Sox fans will immediately disagree with me, but I don't know if Robin has had that moment. You know, I think people who are saying, well, no manager has lasted with three straight losing seasons, well, a little unfair. You know, 2013 and 14 were not designed to win. Those were rebuilding years, retooling years, whatever you want to call it. So if you want to look at him and say, well, they blew it the last couple of weeks in 2012, fair enough. If you want to say 2015, they greatly underachieved, again, fair enough. And if you want to put some of the onus on him right now during the 6-18 stretch, well, yeah, I mean, Rick Hahn and Robin Ventura and Kenny Williams, they're the architects of this team. So, of course, they deserve some of the blame, you know, just inherently because they're running the show just as they deserve the credit. But I don't know if changing managers, I don't know if this is going to be a team because there's so many, you know, accomplished veterans on this team that's going to change. You're going to change managers and suddenly you're going to get a big push from it. You could. I mean, you know, there is grounds for it, but in the same sense, you know, let's not forget that he did lead this team to 23-10 to start the year. So it's not like it's been this bad from the start of the season. So I think he's still going to be at the helm and they're going to have to, you know, fix things from within in the process.
I think so too, Mark. And, you know, whether you want to blame Robin for this or the team, I think it goes all around. But to me, one of the biggest concerns, and I ran these numbers today, is what this team has done against the AL Central.
Yeah.
In the last 5 years. And this, of course, coming off the heels of getting swept by both the Royals and the Tigers in the last week. But look, Robin's record against the AL Central is only, and you could say the White Sox record since 2012, if you want to put it that way. But it's 137 and 184, which is a 427 clip. It's just not good enough. And even the year in 2012 when they were in this down to the wire, they only went 37 and 35 that year. That was the only year in the last 5 years where they were above 500 against their own division. And 37 and 35 isn't really good enough for a team that, you know, is trying to make the playoffs. And I think a big reason why they didn't make playoffs is because they started getting beat late in September by their divisional teams. And that includes a 14-4 record that year against the Twins, which finished in dead last with 66 wins. So the point there being that if they hadn't played the Twins so much, it probably would have been below 500 against. So the general point, last 5 years, pretty bad against their own division, and that's got to change. And what's concerning here is they're 9-12 this year against the division, and that includes being 6-0 against the Twins again.
Right. Well, I think a couple of numbers I just put in my story that I finished that jump out at you. They've lost 9 straight against the AL Central right now. They lost, you know, the last 3 of the Cleveland series, all 3 of those miserable games in Kansas City, and then these 3 this weekend where Detroit just dominated. And the scary thing was, you know, Sale and Quintana were 2 of the pitchers, you know, of the 3. And here's another scary stat. In the last 8 starts made by Sale and Quintana, the White Sox have lost all 8. And, you know, granted, Jose Quintana lost 1-0 to the Mets on Monday. So this is far from, you know, and Sale lost a victory when the bullpen couldn't hold his lead last Sunday. So it's certainly not on them. And you can't assume that Chris Sale and Jose Quintana were going to go, you know, 60-8 this year between the two of them. But you hate to see that when you have, you know, 2 all-star caliber pitchers, say a team not take advantage of that. But yeah, the AL Central, and you know, they've struggled against the AL Central as well. So it's an interesting consideration. You know, I don't know if you can specifically build your team to beat a division team, but for some reason, you know, like you said, you take the Twins out, and the Twins are not a good base, you know, arguably one of the two worst with the Braves, and it's been another rough show against the Central, and you win the division basically by at least, you know, at the worst, surviving, at the best, you know, playing very well against your own division, against the teams in there. And you know, they get the Nationals starting Tuesday, the big James Shields debut on Wednesday against Max Scherzer, which would be a great game. And then they go nine more games in a row against the AL Central. I think it's Kansas City for three and Detroit for three at home, and then off to Cleveland. So, you know, they can't afford to have this kind of same stretch in those nine games against the division.
Scott, last thing for you.
Sure.
So Sox acquire James Shields. Kind of hard to argue with that move. Didn't give up much. Got money back in the deal. Kind of the exact, you know, great middle of the rotation kind of pitcher. But going forward, do you expect this to be a team that's continuing to make moves like that, or you wait it out for a little bit? I saw that Carl Crawford got DFA'd today. It seems like a classic Kenny Williams pickup at this point in his career. But, yeah, I don't know if that's going to really save you. You expect this team to still kind of be with this all-in attitude?
Yeah, I think they will continue to add on until there's reason not to add on, you know? I mean, if for some reason they go home in this homestand and just are terrible, well, and, you know, suddenly they start looking up and they're 7-8 games out of first, that might be a little bit of difference. But, you know, I think they believed from the beginning that this is a playoff team. I don't think they thought this is a team that was going to run off and high, even when they were 23-10 and six games up. But I think they still believe that they're going to be in this thing come September. That come September, they're going to look up at those standings, and there's going to probably be for sure three, and depending on how Detroit's pitching holds up, maybe four. Detroit can hit, I'll tell you that. It's just whether they can pitch. Four fighting for that AL Central crown. So, yeah, I think they'll still add on. I think they're not going to mortgage the future. I see very few trades, in my mind at least, that Tim Anderson or Carson Fulmer would ever be involved in. I mean, Tim Anderson, you know, in the mind of the Sox and their fans, should be your shortstop for the next 10 years, if not come July this year, for sure in 2017. So if you're moving him, you better get, you know, someone you have control over for a long time and just a dynamite player. But I think they're going to look to improve. They're, you know, left-handed bat, probably a power arm in the bullpen, and do what they can just to, you know, to give this team the best position to win in October, which is what Rick said a number of times, but also get to October, which is important. You can't win in October unless you're there. But I do want to quickly add that, you know, Rick, that was an excellent trade yesterday, I thought. You know, with the money coming back and nothing against Eric Johnson or Fernando Tatis Jr., but they didn't give up, you know, either guy who was, like, part of their big plan even in the next probably one, you know, two or three years. Eric may end up being a very good pitcher in the National League, but it wasn't going to happen with the Sox. And in Shields, they got a great guy to pair at the top of the rotation or even in the middle of the rotation, an innings guy that's going to help the bullpen as well as the rotation. So a good move made by Murray. The Sox do well in these, you know, in-season trades with the Kevin Youkilis move. It seems like free agency, they've kind of hit and miss, but the trades they've been pretty good on over the years.
Scott Merkin, MLB.com, always doing a great job covering the White Sox. Merk, appreciate the time and the dog advice as well.
Yeah, I hope I don't regret that one later. But I love all animals. They're great, especially the Wolverines. Those are my favorite animals of all.
You'll be okay. Thanks, Merk.
Okay. Take it easy, guys. Have a good night.
Scott Merk at MLB.com. Let me just read something about Fernando Tatis Jr., and I'm always the guy that's worried that a prospect's going to turn out to be.
This is who the White Sox traded yesterday to San Diego Padres.
He's 17 years old. The key to the trade for the Padres is Fernando Tatis Jr., a 17-year-old shortstop that's a two-way player, might need to move to third base in time, but some scouts think he can stay at short, has a chance to develop into a high-end elite type prospect, has the hit tool and size to eventually be middle of the order type impact bat. Good get here for the Pods. That, if I'm a White Sox fan, makes me very nervous.
Yeah, a little bit, but these teenagers, especially 17, it's so hard to project these guys.
That's true, but I mean,
you ask me, I'm a big fan of the White Sox drafting older guys out of college instead of these 17 and 8-year-olds right out of high school. I feel like it's way easier to project. Just look at Chris Bryant.
Yeah, he's doing all right for himself.
Kyle Schwarber.
There's another one, Indiana. I've been watching Kyle Schwarber walk around the clubhouse this week.
Yeah, you're really impressed?
It's painful. He's not moving very well.
Does he need a dog?
He would have to be in the stroller himself. Yeah. He couldn't do any lengthy walks.
Dog stroller for
we actually have more people. We have people texting in dogs pictures of themselves, their dogs in strollers. They go on long bike rides and they bring the dog along, and the doggy takes a little walk and gets back in the stroller. Your hatred is unwarranted. So we got a text in here from Sharon. Our 7-pound loves her dog stroller, especially when we go on a 5-mile walk. She is safe and comes out once in a while for little walks. There's no physical way she could walk that long. And the name of the dog is Cupcake. And let me tell you something. She most definitely looks like a cupcake with her little blue and red ribbons in her hair. Cupcake. Sharon. Hogue. 720 WGN. What would you like to say to Sharon and Cupcake?
Because
they're listening, both of them. Say Cupcake.
Cupcake is a very cute dog. Love the ribbons. But okay, that's a fair point. You're going 7 miles, and or what? 5 miles. 5 miles, and yeah, that dog's probably not walking 5 miles. I'm not walking 5 miles, by the way. So fine.
You wanted your own stroller too? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I need a stroller. I think that's what I've decided on. Look, again, I'm getting back to
Cupcake.
The dogs I saw, two of them, walking down the south, and maybe I'm wrong, didn't look like a 5-mile walk. Looked like a little stroll down from the condo around the block real quick.
You're probably correct about that, I would assume, yes. But what about Cupcake?
Cupcake's great. Love Cupcake.
Good.
A dog that weighs 7 pounds.
Yeah.
That's little.
The whole lap dog thing.
Like, at some point, that dog's not a dog.
My ex-girlfriend had a very small dog, so I always was anti-small dog. But then I grew to love Brutus, and I miss Brutus.
Oh, you're talking, again,
I'm trying to paint you in a terrible corner, and I know it's not
I know, fair. And you're failing because
I don't think I'm failing.
I am a dog owner, and I love animals.
So do I. I've never complained
about
a dog in a stroller.
Sorry about Brutus.
You know, you want me to complain about an animal so you can feel like we're on the same team for a second?
Yes.
I don't know why.
It'd be nice if we were on the same team for once.
Well, we've been there.
We have.
I don't want to feel completely not on your team. I'm on your team. But, you know, part of being a good teammate is to tell you when you disagree. My point is that when I go to an airport and I see 7,000 dogs nowadays.
Yeah, yeah. I see 7,000 cats.
I don't quite get it.
You ever been on an airplane where they have a cat underneath the seat?
I've like seen.
They make these little cat carriers.
I've literally
carriers.
Like been on an airplane and like somebody pulls a dog out of their brassiere.
Like they come out of nowhere.
Yes, it's unbelievable.
And they don't even make noise. It's amazing.
Like what? Did you just pull that dog out of your like satchel?
Surprised you're listening to The Beat?
No, I'm not surprised at anything. I don't want to answer any questions like that.
Chicago Sports Spoken here. This is The Beat on 720 WGN.
All right, I'm in a little bit of a Twitter kerfuffle right now. And it doesn't have to do with dogs.
Oh, I see. You're battling it out about the White Sox.
I know.
A lot of
technicalities being thrown out there that Ozzy wasn't fired. Which technically he wasn't. He was traded.
Okay.
But if you think that they wanted him to stay as much as they want Robin Ventura. Look, that's not even the point. Whether it's Robin's bad record against the AL Central or Ozzy's bad record against the AL Central, it's a bad record against the AL Central. Stop losing to your division. That's the point.
The overriding point outside of what's going on Twitter right now is are you saying that you want the White Sox to make a managerial change?
I don't think that necessarily fixes everything, no.
So you would or you wouldn't right now? You're Adam Hogue. You get to be Rick Hahn / Kenny Williams. You're two people. You're in a room. You're making a decision today. You're one game over 500. You just got swept by the Tigers.
If you put a gun to my head and I had to make a decision tonight, I would probably pull the plug.
So you want
because I've seen enough evidence over 5 years that this is probably not going to work out well the rest of the season. I'm not necessarily sure that it's going to make anything better. I don't think. How could it possibly make anything worse than the last 3-4 weeks, though? It really can't.
I wouldn't listen. You want to make a managerial change? I'm not going to argue with you. You can go out and get a seasoned veteran manager, and you And what they probably would do is promote Rick Renteria, which would excite nobody with the exception of Rick Renteria. I would not suggest that. I would think highly about perhaps looking at the guy who used to manage the Minnesota Twins, who's sitting out there, and Ron Gardenhire. What are you doing tomorrow, sir?
Well, that's kind of what, yeah, I would, let's, but maybe he's not interested. Maybe they have talked.
Maybe he's not.
I don't know. I mean, would you be interested?
Yes.
Well, okay, that's. If you were Ron Gardenhire.
Why wouldn't I be interested if I was Ron Gardenhire? You have...
Pretty good.
You have a great starting staff.
Decent team.
You know the division. You're not working.
Yeah.
And they're offering you millions of dollars. My answer to that would be yes.
Yeah.
That's just me.
Maybe he's fishing somewhere and he likes it.
Fishing is great. Managing a baseball team, you can do that for 8 months out of the year.
We should reach out to Gardy.
Let's reach out to Gardy. Dan Long, get Gardenhire on the air. We'll negotiate the contract right now.
Let's do it.
That's entirely possible.
I just want to know what Gardy's doing. I love Gardy.
The Minnesota Twins, as we talk Twins baseball on 720 WGN, which is fascinating to everybody. But
you're home for Twins baseball.
You're home for Twins
in
baseball.
Chicago.
I've covered a lot of clubhouses. I've seen, you know, when the visitors come in, I make a point of going in there, try to get a feel. The Twins had maybe the best feel of any club. You would walk in there, country music would be playing. It just had a different vibe. They felt like they were from Minnesota.
They felt like they were from Minnesota.
It was like there was like a non-affected by society, their own little Twinkie vibe that just was warm and welcoming.
Minnesota in general has a great vibe. Everyone's so nice.
That's what I'm talking about.
They're happy. Which is amazing considering how awful their winters are.
But they've got lots of lakes to swim in and do other things. And it's very, you know, the city's not congested. And
I love it up there in the summer. I'm going up there in 3 weeks.
Yeah. Did you know, by the way, as the NBA Finals, as I segue out of this for just 1 second here.
Yeah. I'm sorry. We're supposed to talk about the NBA.
There's no rhyme or reason here. I just wanted to let you know, Adam, that when you're talking about beauty, do you remember when Michael went down the lane against the L.A. Lakers and switched hands?
Yes.
Dan Long, maybe you can pull that highlight real quick on the flyer. I'm sorry I didn't give you a heads up. The, oh, what a spectacular move, 1991. That was June 5th, 1991.
Which game was that?
It was game two. Today is June 5th, 2016, so 15 years ago today, Michael switched hands.
I think you might want to do the math on that one again.
I'm sorry, 25 years ago today. Thank you very much. 25 years ago. Come on, man. 25. Like, oh, holy confirmation that I'm on the back nine over here. Back nine for At the Car. Maybe not.
I mean, not necessarily. You don't know what kind of health advances there will be.
I mean, my dad lived till 90. I'm 3 years away from the back nine from that side. Anyway, bottom line, one of the great moves of all time. And tonight, game two of the NBA Finals, Cleveland and Golden State. I am just kind of curious if people are watching, will be watching tonight, and who you're rooting for. 312-981-7200. Because there seems to be a movement going on that Steph Curry is a little too braggadocious these days and a little too not as cute and as cuddly, and LeBron is deserving of bringing a championship to a city in Cleveland that is championship starved, the longest drought in city history, way worse than Chicago. It's 100 and some odd years combined with the Browns and the Indians and the Cavs. You know, yes, we have the Cubs here, but we've also had the Bulls 6 times and the Blackhawks 3 times in the last 6-7 years. And then, you know, even the 85 Bears trumps what goes on in Cleveland.
Look, I don't really have any issue with, like, I'm not a fan of Cleveland, but I don't have any issue with the people of Cleveland.
Right.
Except for Ohio State fans. So pretty much the entire city of
Cleveland. Ohio State fans are generally awful. Awful.
So maybe I do have a problem with people.
But no, the
point I'm making is, like, I'm cool with them winning. Like, why would you be against it, I guess?
Well, for me, it's always tough when a guy like LeBron is trying to pass Michael. And if he brings a championship to Cleveland, the narrative will turn into, well.
Look, it'll only be his third title.
I know. And I think it's ridiculous to judge a player by titles. I don't care if LeBron wins 10 titles. He ain't better than Mike, but that's how the conversation goes. Regardless of that,
10 might do it.
10.
Okay, wait.
He's not doing it.
You forced me to talk about tennis earlier in the show. And your whole point was on major victories.
Well, that's an individual sport, though. It's a lot different.
Okay, good counterpoint.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Hey, Vic, you're watching the NBA Finals, 312-981-7200. What's up, Vic?
Hey, I'm going to pull for Golden State. I think because they're a well-coached team, they have players that they play as a team. Even without Stephon Curry, we saw how they played in the playoffs. They've got guys that could step it up. Even without Stephon Curry. But I think they're the best team in the game right now. I think that LeBron James, he's a very good player. He's one of the top players in the game, but he's also a selfish player. And Cleveland doesn't have the role players around him to play as a team to overcome Golden State.
Vic, I do want to quibble with you for a second. How is LeBron selfish in your mind?
Well, he thinks it's all about him. He thinks it's all about him, and he can't do it all by himself.
Right. Well,
and the way the coach was ran out of town, you know, that's another indication. It's my team. It's his team. He thinks it's his team. But no matter what, both of these teams, no matter how good as they are, they're still not as good as our Chicago Bulls.
That
91-92 season. I mean, that was the first of their championships, and they just continue to get better after that.
All right, Vic, appreciate you.
Vogel. I'm going to defend LeBron for a second.
Go ahead.
If you're going to criticize him now for wanting to do it by himself, when he went to Miami, everyone was saying, oh, he can't do it by himself, so now he needs all this help, and they criticized him for making that move. So now he's back in Cleveland, and everyone's accusing him of being selfish, wanting to do it all by himself. Like, which is it?
I get what you're saying, and I don't. The whole selfish thing with him. He's
by far the best player on the team. He doesn't.
On the court, he's not selfish at all. In fact, he should be more selfish in my mind. You know, you're bigger, stronger, faster than everybody on the court. I'd like to see him take the ball in the fourth quarter especially and be like, I am putting the ball in the bucket. No one's going to stop me.
I don't get that vibe from him at all.
But he likes to be more of a facilitator. He loves finding his teammates. He likes making, quote-unquote, the right basketball play. He says that all the time, which is great if you have outstanding teammates around you. But sometimes, you know, when he just doesn't have enough right now. The guy's a ridiculous basketball player. He carried a 2007 Cleveland team to the NBA Finals against the Spurs with absolute dreck. They had no reason to be there. He's in the finals for 6 straight years, and this was not my goal in this segment to defend LeBron, but I mean, he's...
But you are.
But I am.
Look at that.
If he loses in the finals here, which most likely he will, he'll be 2-5. In the NBA Finals. Now, how much does that... Now, people are going to crush him for that, but does it really matter? I mean, is it really a fair judgment? Well, he should have carried them to a title. I mean, Jerry West... Brian Windhorst had a piece at ESPN today. Jerry West, he pointed out, you know, Jerry West was 1-8 in the Finals. Jerry West is the NBA emblem. Guy was...
Yeah, good point.
You know, we should change that to...
Michael?
Good old Mike. I think that'd be a nice change. But regardless... The guy that is the emblem of the league was 1-8 in the finals, and you know Jerry West, wherever he ranks, top 20 player of all time. LeBron, you can't put all the finals on him. That being said, when he was in Miami and they're playing the Dallas Mavericks, there's no way they should have lost that
series. I think if you're talking about the greatest player of all time, the titles do matter.
Well, they do matter. I'm not saying they don't matter. Of course they matter, but I think
this conversation a little bit last week, like how much should they factor in the Hall of Fame decision? That's a little bit different. That's a bigger club, but we're talking about who's the greatest player of all time, and if you're going to say that, you know, Mike was 6-6,
matters
six for six.
All that matters.
Like that's and as I pointed out last week too. I mean, I think it was directly tied to his insane refusal to lose. And that thing inside his head that just would not... I mean, sure, you need help, and he had help. But LeBron's had help, too.
Well, I'll give you an example in my mind where they would have been different. first of all, Michael in the fourth quarter, if you needed a bucket, he was going to get you there. He'd either score, get to the foul.
It's a killer instinct.
Right. But he's just a better offensive player.
And I think it's what you're saying LeBron lacks when you say he should be a little bit more selfish. Another way of putting that is when you absolutely need a bucket, he should be the one that's going to the rim, taking the shot, not passing the ball. But a big difference in their games is that Michael's a better shooter.
Right.
Definitely. So the confidence to shoot is I would think, higher for MJ.
He's a better shooter. He's also, he's just better at getting to the basket and getting fouled. You know, when the last year that the Bulls lost to the Pistons, if I may invoke this into the conversation, in seven games, the Bulls in that series were down 2-0, and they were playing game 3 at home. All right. And they lost to Detroit year after year, and the Pistons were a better team. They just were at that point. Pippen and Grant hadn't come on. The Bulls didn't have enough. The Bulls were down 11 at the half in that game. You're down 2-0, and you're down 11. Okay. And Jordan goes out in the second half and scores, I believe, 30. He finished the game with 47 points, and he brought them back, and he willed them to a win and back into the series, and then the series ends up in 7 games. Like, LeBron's history, when things go against him, starts sucking his thumb. He did it against the Boston Celtics when he left Cleveland. He just gave up on the series when they were chanting Delonte West at him. That whole rumor with Delonte West and LeBron's mom, which I don't know if that was true or not, but they were, yeah. You know, do you remember that Celtics guard, the TD guard, Delonte, which is wrong, but moderately.
Well.
It's a taunt. And he gave up on the series. And you lost to the Mavericks and Dirk Nowitzki? Like, I'm sorry.
And I think that's fair, looking at those failures, maybe not with Cleveland, but in Miami.
Right,
especially when you come out and say not one, not two, not three, four. He made some mistakes. That was a long time ago, though.
It was, and and
there's no question that in terms of a PR nightmare, and it probably wasn't even all his fault. He obviously got a lot of bad advice, but it still counts on the record.
It does, and it's top 10 player all time, maybe top 5. Guy's just not Mike. But I think a lot of people are rooting for LeBron in the series. 720, we'll get Brian Noonan ready for his show and wrap it up on the beat. 720 WGN.
The look away, the Levinson, Jordan. Oh, a spectacular move by Michael Jordan.
25 years ago today, Marv Albert still got it, man.
I agree.
He was phenomenal in the Western Conference Finals.
I just wish Chris Webber.
Chris Webber gets a little too personal for Chris Webber at times, but I enjoy Chris Webber overall. You don't like him?
Really? Nah.
Who do you like? Do you enjoy?
I like Reggie.
Do you like Reggie?
I like Reggie. I miss Steve Kerr being in there.
Steve Kerr was great.
I liked him.
I love Doug Collins doing games. That's now a studio guy. I wouldn't mind Kenny Smith's in there doing a game, or Barkley for that matter.
Yeah, but they got to keep that show together. It's so good.
Don't you think that Ernie Johnson should retire and they should hire me for that spot?
Yes.
I mean, I think that would be a good move by TNT. Just make Ernie a sports emeritus type and bring in At the Carm. Not that I would ever want to leave you, Hogue, but I would do it for that.
Okay. See ya.
I thought you were going to say, I'd love you to leave me for anything.
No, I wasn't going to say that out loud.
Oh, not out loud. Okay. you going to watch the game tonight there, Adam, or you got other things going on?
Well, I got plenty to do around the house, but...
Adam Hogue, new homeowner.
It'll be on now that the cable is back in business.
Oh, you got cable back in business.
Yeah, so it'll be on.
All right.
It'll be on. Things will be done. I don't know how closely I'll be able to watch every single dribble. But fourth quarter, when the game starts, I'll be there.
Oh, is that... There it is. The old basketball hate. Only game only matters in the fourth quarter. You tune in right at 7, pal. You're going to see some intense.
I gave your sport plenty of love during Game 7 last week.
It was phenomenal.
I was all about that on Twitter.
That was a great. That you were. You were. You gave. You threw the.
I admitted that it was even better than hockey.
That was so nice to see. I was.
That. But let's be honest. That game was. Like, the average NHL playoff game is more entertaining than the average NBA playoff game. That epic series, coming down the way that did to Game 7, and really, a lot of those games were good in that series. So you get my point. Top-end NBA, better than NHL.
The Sharks and the Penguins are playing tonight opposite the Cavs.
Better than Raptors, Pacers. No question.
Okay, fine. Sharks, Penguins, Warriors, Cavs. What are you watching?
Warriors, Cavs.
Okay. Just making sure.
You weren't listening to my point.
I know, I get your point that the middle of the NBA bores you to tears.
Because, yeah.
That point.
Whereas, like, a full NHL playoff game is, it's intense start to finish.
No question.
Regular season? Different story.
Jonathan Toews right now on doing Pilates, getting ready for next year. Blackhawks will be back. Hey, Brian Noonan's coming up next. We'll get you ready. 720 WGN.